For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, and the returning hero, the man who fought his way through the state legislature this year for the pro-life cause, Mr. Mark Tuttle. Welcome back, Mark.
Wow, I don't know if the lobbying side of what I do has ever gotten that kind of accolades. Right. I mean, that's usually kind of awesome. Under the radar to a certain extent.
Yeah. So. Usually, you know, that's why I was saying, you fought your way through the legislature, but I didn't use the L word. Most of the time people, you know, when they hear lobbyist, it's not usually in the most
sometimes, like when you
terms.
Say lawyer, sometimes right, that has exactly. bad connotations at times, but well, fairly or unfairly.
Well, I am a pro-life advocate. So yes! whether that's advocating at the State House or advocating
here babies.
Civic-wise.
Yes, we do. We love babies. How about you?
What you were doing? I was going to say, of all the pro-life chants, that's the one that I just kind of go, ugh.
Oh, yeah. Well, I came across the banana song. You can YouTube it. That will replace for the entire day. It's so catchy and so silly. Such a kid song. Anyway, hey, what are we going to do today?
Well, the big question is, what did I miss?
Oh, you missed Dr. Peter Redpath. So?
I think that's a great idea. Why don't we have Dr. Peter Redpath back?
Why not? He's got a lot to say and a lot of ground to cover and a lot to unpack.
And we'll do that right after this break.
Imagine an encouraging place. Imagine a home for things that inspire. Imagine a storehouse for good news. No need to imagine. Catholic Radio Indy.
Take Catholic Radio Indy's 40 Days of Lent Challenge. During Lent, listen to at least 1 hour of Catholic radio each day. If you're already a daily listener, add an hour each day or pick a different time to listen. Or, if you really want to go all in, listen exclusively to Catholic Radio Indy from now until Easter. Spend 40 days with Catholic Radio Indy and see what a difference 100% Catholic programming 24/7 makes.
Have you been married and have since divorced? Do you think your marital status prevents you from coming to church? Most Catholics and non-Catholics unfortunately have a lot of misconceptions about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Pope Francis has recently encouraged all people with questions about marriage to make an appointment and talk with their parish priest. As Catholic priests, we look forward to the opportunity to help you on your journey through life. Please make an appointment to speak with the priest today. We are and will always be here for you.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. This is Timothy O'Donnell with Mark Tuttle. Mark's back. And while you were away, we had Dr. Peter Redpath in the cave. And actually, he's back. Right now, Dr. Peter Redpath, he is a full professor of philosophy at St. John's University, New York.
That's former.
Well, you are a very busy and active man and scholar and author of many books, CEO of the Aquinas School of Leadership. You also, the last time we got together, you've formed another movement, institute, following the call to action by Archbishop Vigano around an anti-globalist movement. And then today we want to, and that was a great episode. And then today we were going to begin our conversation, Dr. Redpath, with really focusing more, a little more on education. And this has been a big, big part of your professional career. And again, welcome back to the Catholic Cave, Dr. Redpath. So let's begin with education, and what have you been up to there? I know you've got a couple of books out, but get us started, Dr. Redpath, there.
I don't know how I became interested in reading Mortimer J. Adler's book, How to Speak and How to Listen. I recall. It was because I was invited to give a lecture series, the Waronecki lecture series in Poland. on something related to rhetoric. And Adler had written his book related in a way to rhetoric, but more than that, to education in general. And so I started reading it, and as I was reading it, I started to see how this was a brilliant work, actually, in putting readers in touch with the understanding of philosophy as uncommon common sense.
Uncommon common sense.
About which Abbas had started to write as he got older in life.
Yeah. So what is uncommon about the common sense he was speaking of?
Well, what's uncommon about it is that it starts with the moral virtue of and intellectual virtue of prudence.
Oh.
Adler started to realize that only a prudential people can become philosophical and scientific. That there's an essential connection between prudence and science, between philosophy or science and science, considered as identical as the ancient Greeks did and St. Thomas. Philosophy, science being a psychological habit. The last time we spoke, you asked me about what I chiefly am as a kind of professional, and I said, well, I'm more of a historian than a philosopher, because I do philosophy historically. But chiefly, what I am is an organizational psychologist. And I consider philosophy and science to be organizational psychology. This is the way the ancient Greeks looked at it.
Right. Okay. So let's take a step back. You had mentioned the virtue of prudence. How does prudence relate to organizational psychology? How are those two concepts sort of related to each other?
Well, what prudence enables a person to do is, prudence is a kind of shrewdness. Right? And prudence enables a person to see the proximate causes in the individual situation of an organization being an organization. It gives you the understanding, the principles of understanding of the nature of the organization with which you're dealing, and the way it's unified. To induce a one in a many, if you don't possess that virtue of prudence, you can't do philosophy. The whole of philosophy, in fact, one of the things I started to see among the ancient Greeks was that, especially with Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, that all had an understanding of the virtue of prudence, and for all of them, philosophy flowed out of, as a first principle, a proximate cause, not a logical premise, as a proximate cause of their philosophical principles, what people today would call their system, which is actually it's a psychological habit. Western culture has lost its understanding of science and losing its understanding of philosophy as an organizational psychology. And what I'm trying to do is get it back. That Wisdom Academies program is, people can find it available at www.wisdomacademies.com, or lowercase. And how it operates, and Mortimer Adler. This happened to Mortimer Adler during his studies. The same thing that happened to Socrates. Socrates had been enamored by the teachings of Anaxagoras because Anaxagoras had said that mind orders everything, organizes everything. Creates it, establishes parts, a multitude into parts of a whole, by relating the multitude to a chief end. And Adler started to see that when he was at Columbia, and he was doing it was so obnoxious while he was there that they wouldn't allow him to enter into the philosophy program, the graduate program. They allowed him to go into the psychology program, he wanted to transform philosophy. He wanted to be a philosopher and work in Columbia's philosophy department. He saw that modern psychology, behavioral psychology, was popular because it was able to present itself to the popular, to gain popular appeal. Developing in the general population an understanding of itself as a social science, as a transgenerational type of teamwork effort and enterprise. And that's the way the ancient Greeks considered philosophy. But he didn't realize this. It was only after he started to come across the teachings of St. Thomas and Aristotle, and Aristotle through St. Thomas, that he started to see that the ancient Greeks had actually considered philosophy to be a transgenerational psychological enterprise, a habit of the soul that has to be developed within a culture in order for it to survive. It has to develop. This is scholasticism. This is what the ancients, the medievalists, and even before the medievalists, Boethius, Anicius, Manlius Severinus Boethius, who was called the last of the ancients and the first of the scholastics. He wasn't actually the first of the scholastics. The tradition of the ancient Greeks in doing philosophy was scholasticism, setting up schools. In which you can transmit learning from one generation to the next, beginning with an understanding of prudence, both observational prudence and actionable prudence, which enable a person to see the principles or causes. Philosophical principles are not abstract, logical, universal premises. Philosophical principles are causes of action in the individual circumstance. Let me give you an analogy, and a simple analogy about this. Before you can walk. All human beings have to crawl, right? And before human beings can run, they have to walk. This is a necessary order of habitual development, right? In order to do philosophy, you have to be prudent. If you're not prudent, you're not in touch with reality. And you cannot see the causes that are existing in an organizational whole that enable the multitude that consists of its parts to become parts and to act as an harmonious unit, right? The habit of philosophy. Philosophy is chiefly a psychological habit. Philosophers are psychologists. This is evident to anybody who reads great philosophers. Right? Aristotle is a brilliant psychologist. His father was a medical doctor. The best around in Macedonia. Right? of the king. And he educates Alexander. Aristotle educates Alexander the Great. He's his tutor. Right? He's a man filled with common sense. Common sense being what in Latin and Greek is the St. Thomas taking the Greek term is solares, shrewdness, a kind of shrewdness. Which enables a person to zero in on the principle, right, on the starting point. Most people today, philosophers, they're totally lost. Same thing with people in science. I mean, take a look at modern medicine, for example, and drug companies and how they totally messed up the understanding of medicine, right? It's not scientific stuff that they're passing off today. It's a fraud in general. They don't realize it. Some of them, you know, that the principles that they under which they're working are very flawed. But nonetheless, that's true. Right? I mean, they've lost the understanding of science, chiefly being a psychological habit that exists in a scientist. The scientist, the philosopher, is the first principle of science. They've cut science off from wisdom.
Well, you know, I appreciate you sharing all that. I remember it reminds me of something that you have on one of your websites, and that was a quote from Mortimer Adler. From that conference he held or sponsored, right, where he talked about
1941. Yeah,
1941. That's right, and about how the departments of academia had become, you know, very isolated one from the other, and there's this kind of breaking away. And I wanted to go back, Dr. Redpath, to this question that Mark was raising with you, and that is. You mentioned uncommon common sense, and it's uncommon. So, you begin to talk about healthcare or medicine. What might be another way in which, thinking of like our audience, think of a way in which that this loss of common sense manifests itself, say, in the culture?
Well, first of all, let me focus on what I understand to be the nature of common sense, right? Oh, which is simply a contraction for, or another way of saying, common understanding. A person with common sense is a person who has the common understanding, or the understanding common to anybody who in a related to some subject, okay? Understands the causes that make it to be what it is, right? They understand the subject, and they know whatever anybody who's familiar with the subject knows about it, and they have an initial understanding of it and the way it tends to be unified, exist, and operate, right? They won't think, for example, and I use this example a lot, that an engineer is not going to think that the principles of engineering are the principles of language. Right.
Right.
That if you reduce the whole of engineering to principles of language, your bridges would collapse. That's evident. That's an evident truth. All scientific investigation, understanding, starts with a first principle, which is a principle of understanding. Science doesn't start with reasoning. Science starts with understanding. It doesn't start with faith-seeking understanding like St. Augustine mistakenly understood it to be. Right? It starts with initial understanding, seeking better understanding, right? Improved understanding. Because you've grasped principles that are causing an organizational whole to exist the way it does and behave the way it does because it has the unity that it has, right? the whole of philosophy of the ancient Greeks studies organizations. They look at the universe and they see it as this massive, this wonderful organization that's providentially organized, that in some way has a mind, a person, right, that is connected to it, that's a great provider. The term providere is providence that sees beforehand, the way things are, right? So a person with common sense is a person who understands the principles that are causing an organization to be the kind of organization it is and to behave the way it does, to have its unity, right? So it's used analogously. Very few people have common sense about a lot of things. Most of us have no common sense about much. And if we're pretty intelligent, we're what I call people who are encyclopedias open to the wrong page. This is what the people in the medical profession are today. Okay?
I was listening to Mother Angelica, you know, last night on the Catholic radio. They had one of her old episodes playing. And she said something that really struck me about myself. She's like, she said something, she was talking to someone. She was talking to someone who called in and said, you know, the more we talk, the more we give evidence that we're foolish. And so she was kind of talking about this need to study the Gospels to gain wisdom. And I'm wondering, Dr. Redpath, what are ways in which we can acquire common sense? Like, if I want to have the way you're describing it, I want to improve in my own common sense. I want to grow in common sense. Maybe I don't have any. What are ways in which I can, or someone listening can, begin to acquire common sense?
You have to understand the organizational psychology of Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, and St. Thomas Aquinas. You have to understand that human, what they mean by, what St. Thomas chiefly meant by a human being a rational animal. St. Thomas considered human beings to be animals, right, that have a specific difference as animals that causes them to have common sense, prudence, in the sense that they have this faculty of induction that exists in what he calls particular reason or cogitative reason, which is analogous to instinct in animals, right? So you have to have the ability to work with material, to be familiar with, right? To intellectualize with your senses and sense with your intellect. That is, you can't think of yourself as a disembodied spirit, for example, and you can't think of yourself as a brute animal. You have to have self-understanding. Aquinas says the knower and the thing known belong to the same genus. What does that mean? Well, a firefighter, for example, right, belongs to the genus of firefighting, fires. It's essentially related to it. A medical health professional belongs to the genus of health improvement. You have to have this habitual familiarity from practical and productive experience. Right? Philosophy grows out of, science grows out of, common sense grows out of a familiarity with the subject on a practical and productive level, with a subject and the way it behaves. You see this in children. Okay, children are constantly working with the material, right? And most of philosophy is practical and productive. Very little of it is speculative, right? This overemphasis on the nature of speculative thought that logicians have thrown in is a red herring. Right? That's not the way you do philosophy, the way St. Thomas did it. It's hands-on. St. Thomas is a Dominican. He belongs to the order of preachers.
Right.
He understood rhetoric, right, in the sense of a habit that creates docility, teachability, right, through parental guidance and through conscience, right, conscientia, right, knowing wit, a general familiarity, something that how to do good and avoid evil in a related to an individual subject. Right. We first of all common sense, all reasoning that is solid, starts with understanding your subject. Now, people have a lot of difficult time understanding this. A lot of people, right? But it, once again, it simply makes common sense, right? For years, for decades, Mortimer Adler and before him, Etienne Gilson had me messed up about what philosophy is and does because they focused attention so much on reasoning, right? And philosophical and scientific mistakes, starting with asking the wrong question. So many people focus attention on that. Philosophy asks meaningful questions and so forth. Nonsense.
Right. Right. Well, okay.
Philosophy starts with understanding the subject you're talking about.
Right,
way you're talking about it, you idiot.
Yeah. I was just gonna go back. You know, you had said, you know, a firefighter. His definition comes from his action, what he does. He fights fires, right? A healthcare worker definition comes from, you know, they improve health. That's what they do. So when you take that to a philosopher philosophizes. So what is the verb? What is the action there of philosophizing?
Well, it's loving wisdom. Uh-huh. And wisdom is uncommon common sense. Wisdom is a reflection on prudence. Socrates is constantly making analogies when he's criticizing Thrasymachus and Callicles and all of these people in his dialogues about the fact that they lack common sense. He says he's got an uncommon wisdom. The gods, the Oracle at Delphi had set him on this quest. Right? To share his wisdom by pointing out to people who had no common sense, right? He's given me the wisdom of the pilot of a ship and a baker and so forth, people who have art. He's constantly making these analogies to people who have psychological habits out of which actions grow. Analogy I use very often is weak. St. Thomas makes a distinction between a logical genus and a real genus, right? And how the logical genus abstracts from the individual situation and the circumstances, and the real genus, the philosophical genus, doesn't do that because the philosopher is trying to explain action and what causes it to occur within an organization. In order to do that, to understand that, you have to understand that we belong to a lot of agencies, a lot of different organizations that we're involved in simultaneously, we have habits that causes us to excel at these different things. For example, a firefighter might be a parent, right? Or a business person. You know, you might be single, with respect to marital status. You know, you might be married, you might have children. Now, the way you talk, right, intelligently with common sense depends upon your properly understanding the organizational whole. When I'm using the term genus, I'm talking about an organizational whole. that has an order of parts that are harmonized by a relationship of different habits to an end that enable them to stay connected to that end. Like the members of a basketball team or firefighters, right? Now, in the morning when you're going off to work to fight fires, or in business, you can't talk to your family and your wife, your kids, like you're in business. And you can't talk to people in business like you talk to your children, right? Which is like what the people like Anthony Fauci do. To the American people when talking about medicine. I'm from Fauci's neighborhood, by the way, in Brooklyn.
Okay. Well, I noticed a similar maybe twang.
Right. Yeah. And so I'm sure Fauci knew, my father knew Fauci's. I knew their drugstore, which was right across from St. Bernadette's Church.
Okay, yeah.
And the post office in Dyker Heights.
Okay.
In Brooklyn. And I belong to a neighborhood where people had common sense, shrewdness. Right? They're extremely shrewd, and they could immediately sense the right thing to do in the individual situation. Now, if we take these firefighters, right, and they go on a weekend together and they go bowling and a fire breaks out in the bowling alley, they don't throw bowling balls at the fire.
Immediately, right. Let's hope not.
They might depend on how much beer they've had.
Yeah, they might have had a lot of beer. They might have thrown, yeah, but no.
Right. But the point is that immediately that psychological habit kicks in.
Right, okay.
And so the first thing, in order to do any and engage in any kind of profession successfully, is that you have to know the subject of your study, precisely where you are circumstantially. That's part of your genus. Who you are, what you're doing, where you're doing, when, why, where, and how, and with what, and for what aim, what chief aim. That's all part of the real genus. Of science and philosophy. This is common sense. Now, logicians abstract from all that, right? So, and they can't, as a result, they can't distinguish the difference between conceptual contradictions and non-contradictions and behavioral contradictions and non-contradictions. Because the organizational whole about which I'm talking, the real genus, is the nature of a thing. Modern thinkers, going back to the Enlightenment, deny the reality of natures and things. They deny the reality of final causes.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And in doing that, they deny the reality of real organizations. They cannot understand them from a common sense understanding, so as to make it intelligible to other people. They might understand it themselves because they have to have at least that kind of common sense. And they have to have at least that kind of prudence, you know, to succeed in what they're doing to some extent. Right? To the extent that you don't have this kind of common sense, to the extent that you don't have this kind of prudence, you have no professional conscience. Right? Because conscience is nothing other than prudence at work, right? In the individual circumstance that enables you to direct your behavior. The Catholic Church made a very serious mistake and still continues to make it by not properly understanding the nature of philosophy. It's never understood St. Thomas Aquinas and his teaching. It refers to children reaching the age of reason, right? Like about seven,
Yeah, for the sacraments, like.
That's a very bad way of referring to it. It's not the age of reason, right? It's the age of prudential reason. It's the age of conscience that's becoming maturely developed, because human reason is both speculative and operational, right? What I call command and control reason. And the specific difference of the human beings as rational animals lies in command and control reason. That is operating in conjunction with abstract syllogistic reason. So the principles that you observe abstractly and in general, right? In the individual situation, you are able to apply in the situation in the right way, right? With the right amount of exertion of effort. You apply commonsensically and prudentially, right? You connect what conscience does is it connects. Let me put it this way: through observational and actionable prudence, by saying to yourself, "Well, this is a smart thing to do in this individual situation," right? St. Thomas calls that solertia, which is a combination of solares, and citrus, quick-wittedness, right? That's the combination that he refers to it as. It connects this to synderesis. Right? Through observational prudence and actionable prudence, you connect this principle of synderesis, do good and avoid evil, right, to the choice you're making in the individual situation. And in order to do that, you have to have solares. You got to be shrewd, right? And you got to be quick-witted. You have to zero in on the individual, on the middle term of a syllogism, right? So that you know the right thing to do in the individual situation. Oh, this is what prudence does, the moral virtue of prudence, right? As a combination of this solaire, right? Shrewdness and being able to see the middle term. It allows you to reason about the means to an end. Okay? Now that kind of syllogism, a person who's good at reasoning sees the middle term of the syllogism. In practical and productive activities, you do it related to, in both instances, you're dealing with means to an end, right? In the abstract syllogistic syllogism, right, that logicians train you in, that enables you to understand the organization, what it is, right? It doesn't enable you to understand how to make it operate well, right? That requires that you have hands-on experience with doable deeds, not conceptual non-contradictions. Understanding conceptual non-contradictions will never enable you to understand what is doable and not doable in the individual situation. If you deny the reality of real organizations and the causes that assemble them into whole parts, that enable them to act the way they do, you cannot understand doable deeds. This is the problem with the modern world. This is the problem with the medical profession that is keeping the world hostage at the moment, with prescription drug companies, for example, and these despots, political despots, who've totally lost common sense. And you cannot restore the West or the world today without understanding the difference between these two types of principles. One of the things that businesses make the mistake of doing is hiring psychologists that come out of Enlightenment colleges and universities, like many pseudo-Catholic colleges and universities today, the major ones, the big-name ones. I don't have to name them. You all know the ones I'm talking about. Who drive out of students the principles of common sense, because either they teach them no logic at all, or if they do, they'll only teach them this abstract kind of logical reasoning, right? And they don't teach them these principles of common sense that the ancient Greeks first started to learn by reading Aesop,
right?
For example,
you know what we're going to have to zero in on, though? We're out of time for the segment.
Already.
We are already. Yeah. That's been it's been a fantastic time talking with you, Dr. Redpath. Hey, what's a great way? So people, you've been on the program many times. What's a great way, though, for people to keep in touch with you, see what you're up to, access online resources?
The Aquinas School of Leadership webpage, if you just type in Aquinas School of Leadership, the Wisdom Academy, and also what I would suggest that they do is read this book on that I've written on how to listen and how to speak.
You can find that on Amazon. Okay, that's where I found it.
On Route Books and Publishing.
Okay, great.
He's the publisher of it. But if there's no way, absolutely no way, that the contemporary culture can be recovered. Well, I wrote this as a kind of guide for the perplexed, aside from a couple of other.
That would be me.
Right. Yep.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Dr. Redpath. Thank you so much. That's a great recommendation for that book, because I think there's a lot of people out there, we are perplexed. We want to better understand what's going on. It feels like there's a lot of confusion and trouble out there, and you're helping us better understand what some of those causes are.
Okay, well, thank you. I always enjoy talking with you and Mark, so it's great to do so once again.
Well, thank you, and we'll have you back very soon, and thanks again, Dr. Redpath. He is really a historian of intellectual ideas, philosophy, a lifetime of contributions in the area of education and advancing these ideas. So, and author of many, many books. I find him in, it's easy to find your work in terms of your published books on Amazon.com. I don't know if we always want to give Amazon more money, but that's one place to find them. So thanks again.
You're welcome. Thank you, Timothy.
All right, and we'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Take Catholic Radio Indy's 40 Days of Lent Challenge. During Lent, listen to at least 1 hour of Catholic radio each day. If you're already a daily listener, add an hour each day or pick a different time to listen. Or, if you really want to go all in, listen exclusively to Catholic Radio Indy from now until Easter. Spend 40 days with Catholic Radio Indy and see what a difference 100% Catholic programming 24/7 makes. Throughout Lent, you're invited to join us for the Stations of the Cross every Friday afternoon at 4:45 p.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy. You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
The selfish become generous.
The bitter become better.
The sinner discovers forgiveness.
And the creator of love is introduced.
It's known to happen here.
Positive change.
Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, and we just got done with an interview with Dr. Peter Redpath. Dr. Redpath is always he's fun to talk with because
he's a blast. He's a fire hose.
Yeah, he
Speaking
is
a firefighter.
It is, and it's like drinking out. It's like drinking out of a fire hose too. So let's unpack a little bit of kind of what he was talking about. So Dr. Redpath kind of sees the idea of philosophy and the purpose of philosophy is to take the idea of a whole and break it down into its parts, right? So when he's talking about wholes, that's why he's continuing to talk about organizations.
Yeah, whole with a W.
Whole with a W, but a small W there too, right? Because he's not talking always about the universe. You know, it could be a whole, could be as much as a car, right? So a car is a whole thing. And to understand the car, you got to break down that car into its various parts, mm-hmm. and also its various purposes, you know, the why it exists, what it's there for, etc. So if you
every part of a car has a purpose to it, or it wouldn't be part of the car.
Exactly.
At least in a commercial
sense. And the car itself has a purpose, right? And so to understand the car, the purpose of the car, you have to also understand something outside of the car, right? So the car fits within an even larger whole. So there's these sort of overlapping organizations that go all the way up into the big organization, which is the universe.
Yeah.
And so
would you call those like proximate ends? Like these sort of intermediate ends that ultimately lead towards a final end?
Well, in the practical,
something like that?
In the practical sphere, yeah. So I think that's the other big distinction. I wanted to ask Dr. Redpath about this a little bit. You know, classically, there's a distinction in philosophy between theoretical sciences and practical sciences. Mm-hmm. So, a theoretical science is something like chemistry, right? Where the whole idea, so if you ask, what's the purpose of chemistry? Well, it's to understand the chemical world, right? It's to understand. It's to come to knowledge, right? So that's a theoretical science. On the other hand, if you said, what is the science of pharmacy? Well, the science of pharmacy is to produce medicines or to produce...
That aid health,
right, exactly.
Promote health.
Right. So that's a practical end. And so the science of chemistry is set up to be able to understand science, and the science of pharmacy is set up to be able to produce drugs. And so it's a very different way of thinking. So in practical sciences, you use your practical intellect. St. Thomas kind of made this distinction between the theoretical intellect and the practical intellect. And you lay things out step by step to be able to get to a definite physical end. And the way Dr. Redpath talked about the theoretical sciences, it was almost as if they were practical sciences. So I wanted to get to that question to him of, is there really that much of a difference between the theoretical sciences and the practical sciences? Or are they roughly kind of the same thing where you're still looking for the end purpose of it and step-by-step guide of how to get there?
I also thought there was an element in there, too, of... maybe related to that point, he's bringing up issues as it's problematic around sort of the abstract logical, you know, endeavors or exercises or sets of understandings that they've taken a kind of cost or toll on common sense and our ability to think about things prudentially. And so I thought that was kind of an interesting, I hadn't really thought about that, but there, you can see it. What I kept going back to in my mind as he was speaking was something Bishop Robert Barron had that I'd come across on YouTube. And he had talked about, he was talking about Aristotle, and you and I have talked about this a little bit, Mark, in the cave. Bishop Barron was talking about the Aristotle's four causes. So you have the material cause, which is the stuff it's made of. The efficient cause, which is, you know, kind of how it's formed.
How it came to be. Right.
The formal cause, what form or essence or nature it has. And then you have the final cause or the purpose for which it's being done. So you can think about, like, think about a wooden table, like taking, so wood would be the material. The carpenter's action would be the efficient cause, taking, you know, raw wood and working on it to fashion it into the pieces that then are assembled into what the final form, which is the form of a table, something with a flat surface, four legs. And then the final cause would be the purpose of the table. Like, why did he make the table or she make the table? And so Bishop Barron had in this one talk, and I have my quarrels with Bishop Barron at times too, but this is when I found a lot of agreement because I thought he was very insightful. In the current setting, and I think Dr. Redpath didn't say it this way, but I think this is part of where he's coming from, his perspective is, in our current setting, there's a hyper-emphasis on material and efficient causes, and there's very little understanding or shared understanding or even care or concern about formal or final causes. Like a lot of, and so how does that look? Well, it's the material causes are emphasized because there's our great ability to manipulate stuff, right? To form stuff out of atoms and molecules. And then efficiency, the efficient cause has a hyper emphasis because of change, the pace at which things are changing. So when you have a lot of change, it seems as if there's no stable nature or form or essence to things because things are in constant flux. And then what drops out are final ends and forms. And so that can lead, if Aristotle was right that there are four causes and we're really only focused on two of them, that would suggest that there is a profound insufficient understanding of reality because we're only looking at two of the four causes.
Right. And I think you're right. And I think that's kind of getting at what Dr. Redpath was saying. And I think where he's bringing that to bear is at the idea of different sciences. So he's bringing that at our endeavors of understanding and of doing. So let's take pharmacy, for instance, right? So if you have pharmacy, and you're producing these drugs, et cetera, you might understand the chemicals, you might understand the medicines, you might understand how those mix together. That's an understanding of the material causes, as you were saying. And you would also understand kind of, I guess, sort of how the process all gets started, the process itself. And that process would be the efficient cause. But what Dr. Redpath is saying is you don't understand, we've lost sight of the purpose for which we're doing this, and that's to restore mm-hmm. health, right? So it's not just making as many different drugs as possible.
Right.
It's to restore health. And without a view to that, pharmacy can kind of get lost sometimes. And then the other side of that is the understanding of, it'd be the understanding of sort of the formal cause. What are the boundaries? Where does this fit within our endeavors? Where does this fit within other organizations, within society, et cetera? How does pharmacy play with politics? How does pharmacy play with that? And the pharmacists themselves have to kind of have a grasp of that and understand sort of where the lines are, where the boundaries are, and when, drug companies are no longer functioning as drug companies, but are beginning to function as something else.
Yeah, those are really good points. It relates to something he was talking about, Dr. Redpath was talking about, when he was using the term like organizational holes, WHOLE. So organizational holes, I think in a lot of ways are kind of interchangeable with that there are essences to things or natures of things. And I think that's where that discussion around genus was kind of coming to, was pertaining to. And I think that there is a bit of obscurity or ambiguity in our current setting around organizational holes and what constitute that, because there's a kind of hyper emphasis on what? Individual autonomy, like a complete kind of, I don't say like a nominalism, but something along those lines that we belong, and you touched on this, that we seem to be very fragmented. We seem to see ourselves as very fragmented because we belong to, there's all these different groups. And I think that feeds into something that maybe it's an upcoming show. I know we're going to run out of time here soon, but like identity politics to me seems a bit grounded in this hyper-emphasis on belonging to different groups for different reasons, or some of them voluntary. You belong to them voluntarily. Others you're sort of assigned to or fall into as a category. But I think that hyper-emphasis on individual autonomy does create a lot of problems for us, especially in the realm of, say, ethics and morals.
And that's a problem we're going to have to address in another show, because we are out of time here on The Catholic Cave for today. For Timothy O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle, I'm Kent Blanford. Until next time, be holy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to Kent at CatholicRadioIndy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org.